From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the secret code in your hands. Get ready for that, but here's what's happening. Security officials in Ukraine say that downed Malaysia Airlines jet in eastern Ukraine suffered an explosive loss of pressure after it was punctured by shrapnel from a missile. Well, that tells you that the missile blew up right outside of the plane. They say the information came from the plane's flight data recorders, which are being analyzed by British experts. However, it still remains unclear who fired the missile, with pro-Russian rebels in Ukraine blaming each other. Many of the 298 people killed on board that flight were from the Netherlands. Gaza and southern Israel have seen an upsurge now in violence, despite a plea by the UN Secretary General for ceasing of the hostilities. Explosions in Gaza City reportedly killed 10 more people, including children, and Israel has confirmed 5 of its soldiers died on Monday, 1 inside Gaza, 4 in a mortar attack along the border. 5 Hamas militants were also killed inside Israel. Author Ryan Morrow is the National Security Analyst for the ClarionProject.org. Ryan, Netanyahu said today that he expects this to continue and it's going to get worse. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely right, because as Israeli soldiers dive further into the Gaza Strip, the Hamas is going to be fighting harder to retain what stockpiles that they have. And in so doing, Hamas is going to continue to put Palestinian civilians in danger, because they have no qualms whatsoever about putting civilians in harm's way in order to protect their armory.
What's going on there anyways? Why won't Hamas simply stop bombing? Israel will stop and that'll be it.
Because Hamas is not only dedicated to the destruction of Israel, but if you look at Hamas's founding charter, what they say explicitly is they quote an Islamic verse that says that Muslims are required by God to kill Jews and to fight Jews until the day of judgment, the end of days. And so Hamas is explicitly anti-Semitic, and they believe that what they are doing is approved by God.
Well, this is not going to stop until it really gets out of hand, Ryan, I'm afraid. We'll check in with you later. The frequency of 90 degrees days in the United States, listen to this, has been plummeting for 80 years. And 2014 has had the lowest frequency of 90 degree days through July 23rd on record. The only other year which came close was 1992, and that was due to dust in the atmosphere from Mount Pinatubo near the Philippines. One person killed, 13 others injured, after a lightning from a rare summer thunderstorm struck 2 Los Angeles area locations on Sunday. In all, the 13 people were struck by lightning at Venice Beach, while a 57-year-old man was hit golfing in Catalina Island. The man was hospitalized in stable condition. And a man who was struck by lightning several times, none other than our dear friend and regular guest, Danion Brinkley. Danion, what's it like to get hit by lightning anyway?
George, it's like being set on fire. It's like drinking battery acid. You burn from the inside out. And a lot of people, you know, you have a chance of like 1 in 700,000 of being struck by lightning. And lightning probably kills 3,700 people a year.
Oh, gosh.
And I think that this is a warning. You know, if you go to court, being struck by lightning is called an act of God. But we have to be really conscious and really smart about paying attention to lightning and lightning storms, especially near water. And my heart goes out to the families of those people and the kids in Colorado last week. You know, we got 3 kids in Colorado. And my heart goes out to them, because the guy that's in the hospital now, he's disoriented.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He's probably got a kidney damaged or a heart damaged like me, you know, because it went in the top of my head and went down my spine and out the bottoms of my feet. But, George, I was thinking about what happened today. Do you imagine that lightning went down the phone line, it went down my spine, and it went out the bottom of my feet, and I was wearing Ouijin shoes that had the heels were nailed together, and I was put my foot over nails in the floor. The damage of the speed at which the lightning went through my body welded the nails in the heels of the shoes to the nails in the floor.
Oh, my God.
Think about how much electricity that was. So he's disoriented. The family needs to not try to engage him. They need to not try to engage him. They need to let him find orientation again. We all must be really careful. We always think that when you ground something, you're safe. There are three forms of lightning: ball lightning, lightning from the side. And what most people don't really realize, George, is by the time you see that so-called flash of lightning,
it's too
late. It's on the way back up.
Yeah, you got that right. Daniel, thanks. What's new
Thank
with you, by the way?
Well, I just got back from Pennsylvania doing a program. We're finishing up the 10 Things to Know Before We Go, because you remember that's our big show.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the VA bill. I mean, I'm watching the conferees in the VA bill, because there's a lot of decent stuff in there, but there's a lot of BS in there, George. And so I read every line, and I hope that they are brave enough to come to the table and face all the issues that are wrong. You know, I've been there 31 years, so I see a lot of what's going on. And I'm watching this bill because it's going to be the real marker. You know, a country's greatness is determined by how well it takes care of its children, its veterans, and its helpless. And now the veterans are online, so I'm right on that bill every day.
So glad you're on that. Danyon Brinkley also heads up the Twilight Brigade, which helps a number of veterans who are close to dying. Extra exposure to the sun could potentially reduce the risks of developing some forms of cancer by up to 50%. Previous studies by Professor Rachel Neal found that those who had lived in areas with higher levels of UV rays, that's higher now, had a 30 to 40% lower chance of pancreatic cancer than those who lived in areas with lower ambient UV rays. Well, anxiety disorders affect 1 in 8 teenagers. But now there's an app that can help. The MindShift app. It aims to teach younger adults how to combat everyday anxiety, panic, conflict, and worry. Teens can input their symptoms, and the app will simply create a plan to help reduce stress. Man, technology's unbelievable. Most border crossings in Liberia have been closed, and communities hit by Ebola outbreak face quarantine to try to halt the spread of this virus. The virus so far has killed 660 people in West Africa since just a few months ago. Up next, Peter Matthews joins me. First time for Peter. We're going to be talking about what is happening in the world with his work, Dollar Democracy, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Peter Matthews has spent 30 years as a college and university professor. His life's work involves educating you on accurate facts and progressive ideas that seem to illuminate policies that involve plots, plans, and conspiracies at the highest levels of elite power that has simply divided this country and the world into the powerful and the powerless. This has driven the quest for economic and social justice that he does not stop until he gets some answers. Peter, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Great to be here, George. I really enjoy your show. How are you doing?
Well, likewise, too. You're still doing a lot of radio work, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm with KEIB on Saturdays from 12 to 2 on Head On with David Cruz.
The Patriot.
The Patriot, yes.
Good for you. When you look at, Peter, what's been going on this planet over the last, let's say, since 2007,
yeah,
can you put a finger on this? Because I have never seen a time where so many people were so upset, so uptight in all my life.
You're absolutely right, George. And this is not just national in the United States, which of course it is, but it's global, as you know. This gap between rich and poor has never been seen like this since the feudal days, feudalism. Way back in the 1600s and 1700s, you know, when you had lords and serfs. And yet we have capitalism, which was working quite well for a while. But now a few people have just hijacked the system by buying the politicians, George. They bought the politicians in the United States particularly, you know, with campaign contributions and lobbying money. And then the 1% who bought the politicians, they get their way most of the time, 80% of the time. And therefore we're losing jobs to cheap labor countries. And those countries, people are getting even poorer. They're not being paid enough by the corporations that go there. Our education system is being dismantled. Our K-12 schools have been losing funding, and frankly, they're very unequal. Some schools have $7,000 per year per student. Other schools, like, for example, in Southgate in California, and up in Marin County, it's $18,000 per student. And even among states, it's a whole lot of differences in the per pupil spending. But mostly, it has to do with the rich and poor gap that creates this huge disparity between parents who are fairly well off and can nurture their children outside of school, And the poorer parents are working two or three jobs to make ends meet and don't have the time to be with their children so much and nurture them with after-school programs. That's a real big problem for the American dream.
And Peter, if this gap continues at the pace it's happening now, there's going to be a big problem in this country.
A huge problem. In fact, civil unrest will eventually come about. And already seeing people now, my students in my college, some of them can't even continue, George. They took the first 2 years of school. They made A's, many of them, like my friend, one of my friends, John Bushman. I was talking to him today. He was a straight-A student for a whole two semesters, and he had to drop out for the fall. He can't continue because the tuitions have gone so high and the textbooks are so high, and his mom is making a little bit too much money, $62,000 a year for a family of four, and therefore he was denied any kind of financial aid. And he didn't want to go into a lot of debt, like a lot of students are going to. So he has to take off now and try to find work at mostly minimum wage jobs. So it's very disconcerting. And a lot of his friends are in that state. But what it'll do is undermine American democracy, because democracy relies on a large middle class that is active, that's informed, and that has hope in life and fulfill their full talent.
Well, and we're seeing, Peter, what's going on at Gaza right now in the Middle East.
Yes.
With all these young people out there and people in general who have no hope. They have no future.
And we can see what that does. It just wreaks not only havoc, but just complete mayhem. I mean, the whole society just flies apart, and then so much of killing, and it is very sad. And then people become desperate, and they turn to things they would never do normally. As human beings, we've got a spiritual side to us and the basic side that needs food, shelter, and clothing, George. And we got to make sure people have the opportunity to take care of those basic needs first. And they can move on to our spiritual side and care about each other even more and discuss ideas like arts and politics and faith and those kinds of things. And we're not doing that right now for America. And it's time that we do that this country first, because we can make a difference here. And this country, being the big enchilada across the world, will have an impact as well. And we should change our foreign policy to be geared toward working people, the middle class, and rebuilding the whole world. In that sense, working together with nations.
Professor Peter Matthews with us. Peter, and I think most people, let's say in the middle class, all they want is to be left alone, as Howard Beale said in the movie Network.
Uh-huh.
You know, just leave us alone. That's all they want. They want to have their house or their apartment, their car or cars. They want to be able to enjoy their weekends. That's all they want. They're not going to make, you know, much of an uproar if they have that. But if you take that away, you've created a real problem.
You have. And I even take a survey at the beginning of each of my semesters. I ask my students, who mostly are a reflection of America, they're mostly working middle class, some are working poor, and some are upper middle class in the class at Cypress College. I ask them, what is the American dream for you? And about 90% say, we just want to be able to have good education so we can fulfill our talent and make some money to have a family and a couple of children if we can, and a nice little house with a yard, and have some time to go on vacation and be with our children and go out and have sports, maybe go to a baseball game. And yet about 10% say they want to become megabuck millionaires and billionaires no matter what it takes. So the American dream seems to me popularly is one that you just described. And that's really all the middle class wants. And it's a worthwhile dream. We should be guaranteeing the conditions that will enable them to get up there and get it.
I was talking to my son. He's 32 years old. He's got a couple kids, married. And you know what he wants? He wants to see his kids grow up and have fun and enjoy themselves and have their own families. And he wants to be able to go see their kids one day.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what so many people want. The greedy ones, Peter, the ones who screw up this country, who are the wealthiest of the wealthy, what are they doing this for? I mean, are they so bored with life? I think of the movie Eyes Wide Shut.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
What do they want? Why don't they just leave us alone?
You know, it's actually the top one half of 1%. Not even the top 1%. It's top one half of 1% that funds the elections, uses lobbyists, gets their way through by buying the government, and they want to become richer and richer and have deregulation. And I don't know if they're addicted, George. Is it a psychological problem? What is it exactly? That's a great question. I've wrestled with this question myself. Is it a question of spiritual values lacking or a psychological sphere of insecurity? I mean, these guys are making hundreds of millions a year, and they want to make billions. It's just unbelievable,
they're
and
bored.
It's really hurting a lot of people.
I think they enjoy manipulating people. I think they've done everything they can. They can buy any house they want.
Mm-hmm.
They can buy 100 cars. They can go on 100 trips. They're bored, Peter. So what they want is to do the one thing they haven't been able to do, and that is manipulate and control people. And that is, I think, their aphrodisiac.
It could very well be, and it's a chess game to them, but this is not a game to the rest of us. This is life, and we really do care about our children, George. My wife and I had a little baby, beautiful baby, 3 years ago. She's 2 and a half, almost three. Her name is Paige, and we look at her and look at the children around her and look at the opportunities that they have. And we live in a fairly nice part of Long Beach that's fairly, you know, middle class, and we have a nice school in the area with a science and computer lab. But that school lab was about, those labs were about to be shut down. So what did the parents do? They raised $100,000 a year for 7 years so far, and they could continue to do it, to keep the labs open. But I compared in my book another school about a couple miles away in central Long Beach. It's called Martin Luther King School. The other one's Fremont, mm-hmm. MLK. And MLK has the same per-pupil spending, but they have no science lab. Their science lab were shut down, even if they had one, could their parents write the checks for $100,000 a year to keep it open? They couldn't.
No.
So this is the kind of thing where this is not the American dream, and this is really, really, it really grates on our conscience, those of us who can afford to help pay for our children outside the public school funding. But this has to be fixed, George, because equal opportunity is what this country was all about, and without opportunity, freedom means nothing. To have freedom to be able to do what you want to do, to get ahead, to go forward in life, develop your talents, you have to have opportunity. And that's what this country provided for 30 or 40 or 50. Since the Great Depression, we were expanding opportunity until the 1980s when it started getting taken away from the regular folks.
Now, what concerns me, Peter, about the universities and the colleges is that they continue to pump out graduates. But are there any jobs for them?
No. For millions, there are no jobs. And 40 million American students, today, college graduates, are in debt. Their debt averages $30,000 a lifetime debt. $30,000, which goes up every year from interest. The total student debt is $1.2 trillion, George, and that's going to be the next bubble. Individually, though, these young people coming out of college with degrees, they were so ready to go to work and start a family, and this has put the brakes on them for several years, and you won't believe how much that takes away their dynamism of life. Their breath of life is shortened to a certain extent, not to mention their financial life, because if you start working 2 or 3 years later and you're earning 15-20% less than your counterparts 30 years ago, you're going to be set back throughout your whole life. And this is a real crime, in my view, a social crime. And it does go to morality. And we've got to do something about that.
Dollar democracy. Give me an overview.
Well, dollar democracy with liberty and justice for some.
And there, I like that.
And there is a subtitle. It's optimistic. How to Reclaim the American Dream for All. And that's my last chapter, which goes into exactly how we can bring the reforms that we need. Some of it's already been tried and implemented in some states. But the overview of it is basically that the American politics has been bought in a huge way in the last 30, 40 years, both parties, by the way, not just Democrats or Republicans, but both of them to a large extent, with a few exceptional people in politics who have not been bought, like Senator Paul Wellstone, for example, when he was there, or currently.
Yeah, but look what happened to him.
I'm telling you, and I've been researching that too, and he was a friend of mine. I got to meet him when he came down here. I myself ran for Congress, you know, so I have an insider's look on this too, and it's incredible what you find out when you run. For example, do you think these policies are really talking about issues that apply to people's lives, or are they talking about you doing surveys? You know, like Madison Avenue campaigning is exactly what they're doing. They take these public opinion polls, George, which cost $20,000 to $30,000 one per poll, and the pollster tells them exactly what a segment of the voters in their district are thinking on three key issues or four issues, and they target the mailing in California to those segments of voters with different messages to other voters in the same party. It's completely to manipulate the public to vote for them.
Now, is it brilliant marketing?
It's if you're trying to sell clothes, yes, or cars, but we're not selling clothes or cars. We're selling. We're trying to get ideas out there so people can choose the best ideas for the country. And this is a sin. It's a crime to have that kind of a election system. We need to have public financing, voluntary public financing, like in Maine and Arizona. But more importantly, I think we have to have a 28th Amendment of the Constitution. That's my last chapter. I'm giving it away, actually. But it would actually remove corporate personhood and also declare that money is not speech. Money is a megaphone. It's not speech, and it should be able to be regulated in elections. We should be able to regulate it. But the Supreme Court has said...
It's gone the other way.
The other way. The Supreme Court, back in 1886, they ruled, George, that corporations are natural persons with human rights. The rights. Now it's the right to religion, even, in the Hobby Lobby case. But the right to spend money and buy elections has been enshrined in that ruling since 1886. And then Citizens United gives corporations and labor unions and big organizations the right to raise and spend as much of their own money against a candidate or for it or for an issue or against an issue without even declaring where the money's coming from. That's the ultimate in dollar democracy.
Peter, you stay right where you are. We're going to come right back on Coast to Coast AM. We'll continue talking about your work, Dollar Democracy. And next hour, of course, those of you who are calling now, just wait a little bit. We'll get you next hour. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, get up to our website, coasttocoastam.com or georgenorrie.com, and take a look at the new feature we've got on the highlights reel, Meet the Coast Insiders. They're people like you. They are you. All you have to do is go meet them. But you can also be a Coast Insider. It's part of the club. 15 cents a day. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and fill out the information. Welcome back to Coast. Peter Matthews with us. We're talking about dollar democracy. You point out something that I found fascinating. The iPhone, of course, built in China, as so many things are, would only cost 10% more if they built it here in the good old USA.
That's correct. Instead of $600, it would cost us $665 if we built it here. But you know why they built it in China, and this is what I point out in my book, is that the workforce over there is not only paid a little over $1 an hour, but more importantly, they can be woken up in the middle of the night by order of the company at 3 in the morning and given a cup of tea and a biscuit like I illustrated, and then said, get to work, putting this glass case on top of the iPhone case cover. Put it on right now, and you work for 10 hours. They work for 10 or 11 hours a day, 7 days a week, George, and sometimes with no overtime pay in many cases. So it's that kind of workforce that what one of these Apple executives said to President Obama. President Obama asked him, can we bring some of those iPhone jobs back here? We need some middle-class jobs. You know what the CEO of Apple said at the time? He said, those jobs aren't coming back. And it was because they can have a near feudal serf workforce in China.
That's right.
At Foxconn City, there are, by the way, 700,000 employees for Apple contracted companies outside the United States, mostly in third world cheap labor countries, only 40,000 here. But here's the thing. Apple makes $400,000 per employee worldwide in profit per year, and yet they avoided paying taxes by the offshoring loophole. But not only that, it's really hurting the American working middle class here who had good Apple jobs for the first 10 years of Apple being here. But those jobs are all gone.
All gone.
And this guy says they're not coming. He tells the United States president, those jobs are just not coming back. They're gone forever. Now, can you imagine that, George? We've got to do something to replace those jobs with manufacturing here with new products. That's why I call for a fair trade model that would require raising wages in other countries closer to ours before we open them up to free trade and raising environmental standards, even out the playing field a bit more, so that when an American corporation shuts down here and goes to Mexico or China, they have to pay more money to those workers. Those workers will have money in their hands to then demand new products from us that we can produce and export with innovative technology. And the Germans are doing that.
It seems, Peter, that the manufacturing in this country just seemed to disappear overnight.
It did. It's gone from 30% manufacturing back in the 50s down to 9% of our workforce is manufacturing. And no country can last as a strong nation, as a democracy, with no manufacturing, because that's making things that people can use. You can't just be some kind of a system where people work in the restaurants or they work in high-tech.
Can't be all service.
They have CEOs and then restaurant workers. That's like a two-class society, and all service industries don't work to create the real kind of income that we need. That's why I have a great model in my book. Think about my book, George. It's got an inside and outside perspective. Because I was on the inside when I ran for office. I got 45% of the vote to 52 against the moderate Republican. And yet I was outspent 7-1 because I refused to accept money from corporate lobbyists like Senator Wellstone. He didn't take corporate money when he ran. He actually won, though, by 1%.
He did.
I lost by 7%.
But
I think it's very tough to do it that way. And I will talk about some other solutions. But going back to manufacturing, this country's foundational economy, we were the manufacturing champion of the world after World War II.
Oh, we were huge. We had
it
all.
Huge.
Steel, technology, you name it, we made it. Refrigerators, toasters, we did it all here.
Yes, we did. And that's when we had that middle class growing, because also we educated our middle class. That's something else I believe we have to do, is bring back some of the trades and apprenticeships and those kinds of programs for those people who don't want to go to college, and bring back tuition-free education like we had in California, George. Do you know that, sir?
Mm.
In 1960... the master plan for higher education that Governor Pat Brown, the present governor's father, brought in, every student in California could go to college, community college, Cal State, or UC, with paying only a service fee. It was actually an application fee, $37 at UC, same thing at Cal State, and about $6 for the entire 15 years at the community colleges. and that was taken away after 25 years of keeping it in place. And now the tuitions have skyrocketed. It's $13,000 a year to go to UC. And that's what's keeping the American economy from taking off. That and also creating new jobs, which we should do here. And also, don't forget, there's corporate tax loopholes that I point out in my book, where many big corporations, I've got a whole list of 40 of them at the end of the book, including Facebook, by the way, that paid zero income tax a year ago in 2012 tax return. They made $1.1 billion in profit, paid zero income tax, and received a $429 million tax subsidy from the government. The government gave them money to promote their products. They got a negative 40% tax burden.
It makes no sense.
And a middle-class person is paying 25, 30%. You know, it doesn't make sense. And the schools are suffering.
And he has to pay it.
And he has to pay it. You go to prison.
Or they seize him. They do all kinds of things.
They seize his property, but all kinds of things. With Facebook, there's no problem. That's legal, by the way. How did they get that loophole? They lobbied. They had the lobbyist money. They funded campaigns of people who ran for Congress and even sometimes presidential candidates. And that's how they got the money, the influence. They bought the influence, basically, legally. And that's got to change. And that's why my book points the way at the end. But there's a lot more to talk about here. I mean, the Halliburton loophole. I don't want to talk about every single detail because I want people to go to my website and maybe look for that book, you know, and take a look at it. It's worth it.
Well, let me tell you, Peter, the point is, though, as we just talked about,
sure,
this, I'll call it the continental divide.
Yes.
It can't keep happening.
No.
It has got to come back. That shift has got to change. Because it's going to implode.
It has to happen really very fast, George. Otherwise, the whole American experience will be completely gone. It'll be gone. We'll become a global South, worse than some of the third world countries. There'll be a lot of unfortunate violence here. There'll be civil unrest, and it'll be not a very pretty picture. And we don't want this country, which I love so much. Because my parents were immigrants from India, by the way. They came here years ago. And the children had the middle class dream. We were able to, in the 1970s, when we were in college, we all got college degrees, graduate degrees. We had families. We bought a home. And now American children, even those born here, are having a very difficult time even starting out in life. And that has got to change. Otherwise, our country as we know it, which has been so good to many of us, won't continue this way. It's very serious. And these guys at the very top, the mega, mega billionaires, and multimillionaires, there are a few of them that care and know what's going on, like Warren Buffett. He says he should pay at least the same tax, maybe the higher tax rate than his secretary, right? Right now he's paying less than his secretary because that's how the tax laws are written. So there are some good people who are fairly wealthy who understand the need for, when you share resources and opportunities, everyone benefits, and we have shared prosperity. You know, I love this one phrase, George. You probably heard it before. It's an ancient Chinese proverb that was written about in the Talmud, the Jewish scripture. It says, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. If you teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime.
Yep.
And that's what this is about. This country was about that, and we built the middle class in that way.
So true. But nobody, no presidential leader is fixing it, Peter. Nobody's fixing it.
They're so comfortable with their jobs, and they make lots of money. And you know what else happens to many of these members of Congress, George? Billy Tozen of Louisiana, who was the congressman for 20 years or so, and he carried the water for the pharmaceutical industry. He gave them all kinds of tax breaks and loopholes and deregulation. When he came out of Congress and retired, he received a job from them. The pharmaceutical made him their chief lobbyist and gave him $2 million a year. His salary went from $165,000 to $2 million a year when he got out of Congress and became a lobbyist for them. And this is the kind of revolving door you see all the time. I mean, here's an interesting point when you talk about foods. You know, I have a chapter on genetically modified foods and some of the environmental devastation occurring with these big companies, including Monsanto. Michael Taylor, who was a lobbyist for Monsanto and a vice president of Monsanto, was appointed to be the deputy commissioner for food and veterinary medicine at the FDA.
Yes. Isn't that something?
What? That's like the fox guarding the chicken coop, isn't it?
How does that happen?
This is the guy that gave us bovine growth hormone and antibiotics, which is really pervading all of our food. How did it happen? It happened because Monsanto has deep tentacles into every political area, especially with campaign contribution and lobbying money.
And they're buying and owning almost every seed imaginable.
Yes, Terminator seeds, which are just creating such havoc in many of the global South countries. These farmers in India, for example, are committing suicide because they can't afford to buy these seeds as the prices are raised by Monsanto, and only Monsanto can sell to them because the contract calls for that. The seed dies at the end of it. They can't even plant it anyway. And they're stuck with Monsanto's seeds.
If it blows, Peter, onto a farmer's land, the farmer gets sued.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's right here in the United States. It happened in Canada. It blew on the man's land. He got sued by Monsanto.
He lost.
He lost the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Where are freedoms going, George? That's what we've got to really. This is essentially the question of, are we still free as Americans?
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
As you look at dollar democracy, have you factored in a major conflict, or are we going to be straddled with these regional wars all over the planet?
The regional wars that are occurring right now, you mean?
Or are we going to get the one big one?
Well, here's what happens with these regional wars. They can all of a sudden develop into a very much bigger one through miscalculation, George. Even World War I was started through miscalculation. And this is what can happen. Misperception on the side of one side or the other, and overreaction. That's why regional conflicts have to be tamed down. You have to tamp them down before they get out of hand. All of a sudden, a conflagration occurs, you end up with a world war. So we have got to work on that. But to work on that, we've got to have our own base right here in the United States, our own economic system straightened out. So that way we can focus on other countries as well and help them and be cooperative in a shared prosperity throughout the world. Because you can't have peace in the world until you have justice and fairness and prosperity throughout the world as well. And we have to start right here. And that's what my book is about. How do we get there from here?
Peter, last week I talked to a couple guests who believe, and I think you do too, that America is being sold out on purpose, that they are doing anything they can to crush America economically, bring it down to its knees, and then bring it into fold in a much broader world government. What do you think of that?
You know, that sounds very convincing, George, because what does the word conspiracy mean by, according to Webster's? It is planning in secret for an evil purpose that affects a lot of people, that basically hurts people. And this is exactly what we're seeing, even looking at from the outside, as to what some of these super elites are doing in this country and throughout the world. And they're really hurting not only the American people, but the world's people. And so in the end, if there's no justice, there's not going to be peace, you know, and you've got to have fairness. And that starts with economic fairness, so everyone can have a chance to live a full human life. I mean, isn't life all about enjoying ourselves and seeing who we are and why we're on this earth? I think it is. But to do that, we've got to be able to have our stomachs fed. We've got to have a house over our head so we don't get pneumonia, clothing. Those basic things is what the American dream was about, and the free time then to enjoy our families. And that's what's been taking away.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to look at the details. And this globalization, free trade without fair trade, is just really killing the middle class here and throughout the world. If you look at Mexico, for example, the reason, and also Honduras, with those young children coming across the border, riding those trains and taking a chance.
Oh, my God. Is it that bad over there where they'd have to do this?
It is so bad because no one in their right mind would even take a chance on sitting on top of these trains coming up through Mexico from Honduras, and some of those kids fall off the train right to their death. It's so bad there because there's a drug war, a so-called drug war, because the middle class has been decimated through corporate, basically, globalization and these big... You know, Honduras was the first banana republic, by the way. I hate to use that term. It's a drug term. But basically, it was a country established 100 years ago. The economy was completely conquered by American corporate banana company fruit plantation investors who went over and bought the land out, paid the workers their next to nothing, and we're still doing it with clothing factories in Honduras. So there's child labor. So not only that, because of there's no jobs there also, that's been another problem. Then some of these young kids went into drug dealing, or the drug gangs themselves that are there dealing drugs are forcing these young kids, doing all kinds of horrible things, capturing them. You know, in fact, they're raping little girls and putting them in sacks. And it is horrible, George. And that's why these young children, their parents are saying, please, to a coyote, you know, a guy that gets them across the border.
That's right. And they make a lot of money, those coyotes.
They make as much money as a family would make in 9 months of the year's salary or more. And so it's all their whole salary's gone
for one year
salary.
Yep.
To get one kid across the border. That's how desperate. And you know what it really bothers me is many of our politicians don't understand the macroeconomic causes of illegal immigration and of this kind of a degradation. And also the elites in Mexico who've been corrupted over the years and who've been in league with globalization, with American and Canadian elites to bring in NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. So you would think what we're describing here almost seems like a conspiracy, because these guys know what they're doing. They do get together and make decisions collectively as to what the rest of us will have to live with. So by technical definition, it could be something like that. I want to raise that issue. Is there a conspiracy that's going on in the world now? So the top one half of 1%. And the numbers are staggering, George. 1% of the world owns 80% of the wealth. In the United States, 1% owns almost 50% of the wealth. Here's a number for you. The top 400 families in America, the richest 400 families, own the same amount of wealth as 150 million Americans, half the country. Top 400 families own the same amount of wealth as half the American people, 150 million people. Can you believe that? That's what's happened with our gap
here. I believe it.
And that's just not going to work. It's not working now. And I see it every day because I'm teaching on the front lines where middle-class youth are starting to become very despondent, and they say, what happened to us? Why did your generation let this happen? I have to explain to them, it's not everyone in my generation, it's not everyone in their generation that's doing poorly. The children of the top one half of 1% are going to Harvard and Yale and USC, and they're doing great.
There's an area in St. Louis, Peter, called the Hill.
Yeah.
And years ago, you know, all the Italian families were from there. Joe Garagiola, the broadcaster and baseball player, Yogi Berra, all of those all of those great people came from the Hill.
Yeah.
And I was there a few months ago. They've got some nice restaurants out there.
Yeah.
And all around these restaurants were empty, tumbleweed-laden factories with nobody there where you could hear the wind hitting the windows.
It was ghostly.
Ghostly. It was just unbelievable. It was just nothing. And I looked at these buildings, trying to guess what was made in those factories years ago. I don't know.
It's
hats, who knows?
Yeah.
But
a lot of things that people
gone.
Are buying around the world,
But it's gone. It's gone. And I looked at these factories and saying, they'll never come back. Knock them down because they'll never come back. And that is a shame.
It is a total shame. And we should be building new products. And here's where I have an idea that there can be something called industrial policy, George, where, like they do in China, by the way, if a Chinese business has a contract for, like, say, $1 million with a foreign company, the Chinese government immediately provides capital for that business and they provide support system. For example, if the company is based in the middle of China, the Chinese government will actually pay for the transport of their products from the middle of China to the coastline, and then the company takes over the cost from there. It also provides scientific research and development to feed to these new companies. And by the way, the hybrid car, the Toyota Prius, was built that way with industrial policy in Japan. You know, we invented that electric car in America, right? 80 years ago, 100 years ago.
That's right.
And we gave it away. And Japan decided to take it, and they took their industrial policy through their Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, called MITI. It's an industry, a government-owned agency, which hires these cutting-edge scientists coming out of the colleges, engineers and scientists, to try the new technologies, to come up with new technologies, and then when they invent the technology, they feed that to the corporations to build new products. That's what happened with the Toyota Prius, the hybrid, and the Honda hybrid in 1997. Japan became the first country to put the electric motor together with the gas motor and have a computer brain talking to both as to when to run. Because the problem with the American electric car back in, you know, 100 years ago, even recently, is that it dies after 80 miles of range. But the Japanese came up with a combination car with this, what I call industrial policy. Why can't we put our cutting-edge scientists and young people coming out with degrees to work in the best technology and feed that to our manufacturers here and subsidize them to provide the kind of products that can sell around the world? It can be done. That'll create those jobs. Bring those jobs back in St. Louis and everywhere else.
Oh, it can be done.
But where are the politicians talking about it? Where are the leaders?
But again, though, Peter, I am amazed at how quickly it seemed to just vanish. Even the steel industry.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We used to make the world steel.
We were number
China
one.
China does now.
Yes. Now South Korea does. Germany does. China does. It's everywhere else except here. And steel is the foundation of a lot of things, literally and figuratively, of the buildings, of the trains. By the way, there's a company here in L.A. called Balcon, which builds electric buses, electric cranes for the port, and it does a good job, and it really reduces pollution. Now, this company is a small business, and yet the government hasn't provided the kind of capital or the kind of subsidies that they could help it with to get it on its feet. Because once you get the production going as a business person, as you produce more units, as more mass production takes place in your factory, the cost of each unit goes down. Am I right?
You're right.
And so then it captures the economy. The Toyota Prius was subsidized by the Japanese government so it could sell here in America in 2001, when I bought my first one. It could sell for $20,000 or $22,000 rather than $40,000, which it cost to build, because the Japanese government said, we're going to subsidize that car until people get addicted to it around the world. They can
and they were very smart.
Very smart. Long-range thinking. That's the kind of thing we need.
Well,
to
the
here,
other
George.
Thing, too, is containers, the price of shipping, all of that went down. Peter, we're coming back in a moment. We're going to take phone calls with you. And if you've been displaced from a job, check in and tell us the story. How are you getting by? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast Radio.